Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Think Thursday Sales Enablement Web Conference Series. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, but following the presentation, we will conduct a brief polling session followed by question and answers. In addition, today's conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Amy Malkazin. Please go ahead, Amy.
Thank you, Kelsey. Hello, and welcome to today's IBM Think Thursday Sales Enablement Web Series. I'm Amy Malkazin, as Kelsey mentioned, IBM Program Manager, and I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. Today's Think Thursday web conference topic is Processor Value Unit Licensing for Middleware. And today, our featured speakers from IBM are Melinda Matthews, Director of Worldwide Software Group Channel Sales, Roger Kerr with Software Group Strategy and Planning, Mike Ryan, Program Manager for Software Group Channel Sales and Technical Enablement, and also available in the Q&A session will be Sue Swanson, Manager of the Passport Advantage Program. If you have downloaded today's presentation and are following along, I am now turning to slide 2. Dial-in details are provided on this slide. Please note our international toll-free call-in details will remain unchanged for the whole year. And we provide a dial-out feature for your convenience. If you are located in a country without toll-free coverage, simply dial in using our toll number and ask the operator to call you back. If you are in our e-meeting today, the best way to view the slides is to go to the View menu and choose Make Shared Area Full Screen. Presentations and audio replays of prior Think Thursday web conferences are available on the IBM Virtual Innovation Center, also known as the VIC. The URL and instructions on how to access these deliverables are provided for you here on slide 3. Please note, the way to access Think Thursday has changed to make it easier to find the Think Thursday software sales enablement content and replays. We've also shared information on how to add Think Thursday to your VIC profile in case you are unable to find it. And you can always check the upcoming Think Thursday schedule at either the VIC or the Software Group Marketing and Education event calendar. These are provided as hot links, which you can directly access from this presentation. If you have any program feedback, including topics you'd like covered, please send an email to me or my other program managers listed here, Alice Kaplan or Mike Ryan. Our addresses are shown here on slide 4. This program series is designed for you, our IBM business partners, so let us know what your skill enablement needs are to best accelerate your IBM software business practices. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Melinda Matthews to kick off today's call on processor value unit licensing for middleware. Melinda?
Thank you, Amy. Hello, everybody. And we've had a fantastic turnout today, but I guess for the title, we should. So my name is Melinda Matthews, and I'm the Worldwide Channel Sales Director for IBM Software Group. This is the first meeting of two. The second one will be on August 2nd. And we're going to take you through the detailed training to describe the changes that Software Group is making to our licensing structure. Now, immediately, when a vendor says licensing structure, customers become concerned that we are raising our prices. I want to assure you, we are not raising our prices with this announcement. I'll say it again. We are not raising our prices with this announcement. So please be comfortable that your customers' current budgets will not be impacted, and this message out into the marketplace will not be about a price increase. In the past year, software licensing with all vendors has become very complicated. And just like our competitors, we have introduced a number of exceptions to our one license per processor policy, and in effect, introduced a series of licensing tiers or levels. This has occurred because of the changes in the underlying processor technology. Hardware vendors have begun the widespread adoption of technologies such as multi-core, which impacts the way the middleware vendors, including IBM, license the software. I realize many of you might not be familiar with these changes, and although we are not going to turn you into hardware experts, the presentations you're about to hear will describe how these changes in the marketplace from a hardware design have impacted the software licensing models. You will hear about the new processor value unit structure that we announced on the 25th of July. This new structure provides a flexible foundation for our middleware licensing that addresses these issues and the future hardware changes and will provide clarity to our licensing approach. One other important aspect of the new structure, as most of you already know, when our customers deploy their middleware licenses on more powerful processors, they are able to run larger workloads. This is one of the key drivers behind the current hardware consolidation trend. This is great for our customers, but as a software vendor, we do not receive the similar benefits. In fact, in many cases, you, our business partner, not only lose potential opportunity for new license revenue, but we may also lose the maintenance on the portion of the existing licenses since they are no longer required on the consolidated system. Under the new processor value unit structure, we intend to continue to deliver price performance. We are planning to manage price performance as we charge customers for some of the incremental value they realize. The net here is, as more processing power is put on smaller boxes, the more throughput that goes through, the software now needs to be licensed appropriately. So you will now have the possibility to obtain this additional revenue that as the customers migrate to these more powerful systems. The processor value unit licensing structure is a very positive change to our licensing. It will make it possible to adapt to the new processor technologies coming out soon in the marketplace. I encourage you to listen carefully to the presentations today and additional detail being provided on the follow-up deep dive session. Together with these sessions, they should be able to provide you with the background you need to explain this announcement to your customers and to make sure together that we continue to build sales momentum throughout the third quarter and into the final quarter of the year. I'd also suggest that if there are any needs to have sit-down sessions, that your coverage team would be happy to do that. And if you are new to the IBM software portfolio as a partner and you don't have a coverage, please feel free to give myself or anybody on this call, and we will help you understand this new model. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Roger Kerr to take us into it. Roger?
Thank you so much, Melinda. As Melinda said, my name's Roger Kerr, and I'm part of the Marketing Organization and Software Group. And I'd like to talk to you today about this announcement, the processor value unit announcement, which we made this last Tuesday on July 25th. And I think you'll see that it reinforces the fact that IBM is evolving our per-processor licensing approach in a way that carefully balances licensing simplicity with the value that an individual customer receives from our middleware on specific hardware platforms. And this evolution does not change a customer's net price today, as you heard from Melinda, but in fact it builds a foundation to accommodate future software and hardware technologies. If you'd move with me to slide 7 in this deck, we'll cover the agenda. And during the presentation, I'm going to be describing why IBM made this announcement, what it is we announced, and how we will implement it. We'll start by looking at the current licensing marketplace and the ways that new hardware technologies, especially multi-core chips, have impacted software licensing. To do this, we will also discuss some key hardware terms that have become important in software licensing. Once we have this background, I'll then describe how IBM and most other middleware vendors have adapted their current licensing structures to address these changes in the interim. Then we'll take a look at the new approach IBM announced this week, again called processor value units, and the benefits of this structure. And of course, this includes that key benefit that customer budgets won't be impacted since we didn't change our prices. So let's go ahead now and move to slide 8, and we'll just overview briefly what the announcement is all about. processor value unit is a replacement for the per-processor processor licensing model for all middleware that's available through Passport Advantage that used to use the per-processor metric. And of course, we do have other software licensing metrics, such as user-based pricing, in fact, a number of varieties of user-based pricing, but none of these other metrics are affected by this announcement. Only those products which are licensed using per-processor are impacted today. Now, we have a simple conversion from the existing per-processor licenses, which I'll show you later in the presentation. And a key feature of this conversion, though, is that with the exception of some minor rounding changes that occur in some countries, we're not changing our prices. And I'll speak a little more about those rounding changes later. And I also want to mention that we've told you that the announcement took place on Tuesday, but general availability was the same day. So this new structure is already in effect. So let's go ahead now and turn to slide 9, titled Per-Processor Software Licensing. And let's start by looking at the existing per-processor licensing environment. Historically, both IBM and other middleware vendors have required one processor license for each core on the server. This is what we refer to as full capacity licensing. Now, in the picture you see on the top of this page, four license entitlements would be required since the server has four processor cores. Now, of course, we've also made subcapacity licensing available when a customer doesn't need to license to all the processor cores on the server. Subcapacity licenses use separate part numbers and has a set of conditions which must be met. And let me take this opportunity to just point out two of the key conditions that the customer has to meet to use subcapacity. First, they need to run a no-charge compliance tool called the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software. And they must use that tool to generate, review, and then submit a report on their usage to IBM quarterly. And if you're interested in learning more about subcapacity licensing, I would refer you to the subcapacity page that's available through Passport Advantage on the web. Now, to give you a sense of the impact of this announcement we made this week, just over half of IBM's middleware revenue currently uses the per-processor license charge metric. And of these licenses, a little over half of these are on x86-based systems, with the remainder on either RISC or Itanium systems. And going forward, we expect the percentage of our licenses deployed on x86 servers to grow about 10 points faster than on RISC systems, or at about a 12% compounded annual growth rate. Let's go ahead now and move to slide 10, titled, What Exactly is the Processor? And before we go any further, I want to talk about some of those hardware terms because they've recently become very important in software licensing discussions. From a software perspective, the core is the most important component of the server system. It is functionally the unit that actually interprets and executes the software instructions. And we can have one or more cores placed on a chip. As you can see in the upper left of this chart, we have an example with one core on the chip, and in the upper right, two cores, which we would then call a dual-core chip. Or more generically, when there are more than one core, we call it a multi-core chip. Now, these chips then plug into what is called a socket on the server. And at one time or another, you may have seen the pins coming out of the back of a chip, and those pins are what actually plugs the chip into the socket. Now, prior to the introduction of the x86 dual-core chips in April of 2005, there really wasn't much of a question in the industry about what a processor was. When dual-core chips were originally introduced by IBM back in 2001 with the Power 4 architecture, both the individual cores were faster than the previous generation of cores, and then by putting two of them on the same chip, customers actually saw their performance improve over two times, in fact, not that far from three times for the chip as a whole. And as a result, almost everyone in the industry agreed that the processor should continue to be defined as the core, because customers were getting the full benefit of both of those cores on that chip. However, when the x86 dual-core chips were introduced last year, Intel and AMD implemented the performance improvements using a different strategy. They actually began focusing their performance improvements at the chip level, not at the processor core level. So with their dual-core chips, Intel and AMD actually slowed their processor core down so that they would require less power and generate less heat. But by putting two cores on a single chip, the customer still saw the normal intergenerational performance improvements of this new chip over the previous generation. Now, IBM, as do most middleware vendors except Microsoft, continue to define a processor as the core because this is where the software actually executes. However, you should be aware that most hardware vendors have followed Intel and AMD's lead and now define the processor as a chip, frankly, because they can't sell half a chip. And as you can imagine, this has led to a great deal of confusion, probably in your own businesses and certainly in our customers' businesses. And one of the key things we need to help them understand as a result of this announcement is that IBM has and continues to define the processor as the core. And for the remainder of this presentation, and in fact, in any licensing discussion that you have with IBM Software Group, you should be aware that we use the terms processor and core interchangeably. That is, we treat them as synonyms. Now, I'm sure that you're aware that the number of processors that a customer might require for a particular workload can vary by processor type, with the customer requiring more processors when a core is relatively slower. And you can see this graphically on the bottom half of the chart. Now, of course, this difference impacts the way a customer has to evaluate these alternative platforms when they're considering where to implement an application, especially when they take into account the number of middleware licenses that would be required. And to provide a specific example, it generally requires more x86 processor cores to run a particular workload than would be required if that workload were running on a System P processor core, or what you may be more familiar with as the P series, prior to their rebranding that earlier this year. And let's go ahead now and move to slide 11, titled Historically Fewer Processor Cores Are Needed Over Time. And let's take a look at some of the implications of the new strategies on this customer workload evaluation. So for over the last 30 years, hardware vendors have really been delivering their performance improvements at the processor core level. And customers have become accustomed to a reduction in the price per unit of throughput when they buy this new technology. Now, this has been great for customers because for a constant workload, it's meant that the customer over time can run it on fewer processors, which of course means they require fewer licenses. Now, there are two new chip strategies, as I've mentioned on the previous page, that are now being used that can improve performance that will impact software licensing. And I want to take you through these because this leads to some of the issues that we've addressed through the new licensing structure. Of course, the performance of the processor core can continue to be improved by increasing the clock speed of the processor. That's what historically has happened in most processors. And in some vendors, including IBM with our power architecture, will continue to push processor performance this way. However, another way to improve system performance is to place more than one processor core on a single chip. And this, as you saw on the previous page, is what we call a multi-core chip. And although the total chip level performance may not equal the raw performance of each of the processors, that is, if you have a dual-core chip, a chip with two cores on it, the total chip performance won't be two times the speed of the individual chips due to the coordination effects to manage, jointly manage memory, jointly manage the system bus, etc. But by putting multiple cores on a single chip, vendors have found that to be a very effective way to provide additional performance. And of course, hardware vendors can use either of these approaches individually or they can use them in combination to provide additional performance improvements. Now, unlike IBM, other vendors, including Intel and AMD, have primarily adopted the multi-core chip approach to provide improved performance. Now, this strategy really started with the introduction of AMD's Opteron chip in April of 2005. And both Intel and AMD chose this approach in order to reduce the power required and the heat generated by their systems. And as I mentioned on the previous chart, they actually slowed their processor cores down on these chips compared to the previous generation of single-core chips. But again, improved overall chip performance by putting those two cores there. And going forward, we understand from the information these vendors have provided in the marketplace that essentially their core performance is going to be flat over time. Not literally flat, but pretty close to it. They'll drive their improved performance by leveraging multi-core chips. Of course, we mentioned that IBM, with our power architecture and some other vendors, will continue to improve performance of the processor cores. And so as you can see in the bottom half of the slide, over time, this means that the differences which have existed in the past in performance between slower systems and faster processor systems are only going to get greater. And now, although there were gaps in processor performance prior to 2005, as I said, these gaps are just going to increase very rapidly as these alternative chip strategies are executed. And, of course, this is going to impact the way the customer has to evaluate alternative platforms when considering where to implement an application, especially regarding the number of middleware licenses required. And for a middleware vendor, and for you folks as part of our sales team, this processor core performance disparity really creates a dilemma regarding how we price our middleware. Should we set the prices targeting the slowest processors available in the marketplace, thereby providing a real bargain to those with faster processors, or instead should we set them based on the fastest processors available and effectively overcharge those with the slowest processors? So let's go ahead and move to the next slide, slide 12, and take a look at how middleware vendors have responded to this issue. What we've pretty much all done is required a different number of licenses on some processor types. Now, of course, the changes in middleware licensing began with the introduction of that x86 dual-core chip announced in April of 2005. Now, IBM felt that since customers were getting much less than a 2x performance improvement over the previous generation of single-core chips, because you remember they slowed down the processor cores on those chips, we made an exception to our one license per processor core policy and only required one license entitlement for the two cores on that x86 dual-core chip. And the other middleware vendors in the industry pretty much adopted this same approach. And then late last year, Sun announced new server systems that used the T1 octa-core chip, or 8 cores on a chip. That was a chip codenamed Niagara. And we made additional exceptions since this system had unique performance characteristics. Now, all of this has added complexity to software licensing, both for you, for our customers, and for IBM. In effect, what all of us in the industry have done is introduce multiple licensing levels or tiers for software licensing. And as you can see in the table on the bottom half of the chart, IBM now has 3 separate tiers. And you can see that next to it, Oracle has the most tiers at 4. Now, you should be aware that IBM, Oracle, and BEA all continue to define a processor as a core. So in effect, what we've done through these exceptions is to create fractional licenses at the processor core level. And we've heard from our customers that fractional licensing and the somewhat complicated rules that some of our competitors have around it can be very confusing. I also want to make one more comment about this table while we're looking at it. This is the table of effective license entitlements on the bottom of the chart. There are some vendors out there who would like to get customers to only compare them against IBM based on the number of software licenses required. And as you can see in that table, there are some platforms where we do require more effective licenses than others have. However, you need to remind the customer that the number of licenses is only half the story. I'm sure you're all aware that the price a customer pays for a product is really the price per the particular unit times the quantity of those products they need. So with the license entitlement shown here, all we're talking about is the quantity needed. To understand the real bottom line impact to a customer, they have to compare their middleware alternatives at the final price they're going to pay. And I'm going to go into this in a little bit more detail in a couple of slides. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and move to slide 13 and take a look at why this is only going to get more complex over time. So as we said, with x86 dual-core servers, we effectively require half of a license for each processor core on that chip. And as the number of processor cores on a chip increases, these fractional licensing requirements will become even more challenging. In fact, the industry analyst firm Gartner Group wrote in regard to Oracle's fractional licensing approach that the structure just won't effectively scale to handle increasing multi-core environments. And in fact, we show 16 cores on a chip in the slide and the picture in the top half of the slide. But in fact, in the last couple weeks, Intel has let it be known in the marketplace that they're going to have 24 or more cores available on chips by the end of this decade. So you can see it's going to get a great deal more complex very quickly. Now, there are folks out there, including some of the chip vendors, who suggest that the best way to solve this problem is for middleware vendors to license the middleware at the chip level instead of at the core. And let me take a moment now and show you why that approach won't work either. With the power that's available in today's processor cores, customers are increasingly wanting to partition their systems so that an application runs in only a subset of the total number of processors in that system. And, of course, they want their licensing structure to support that. And that's why we introduced subcapacity licensing in 2005. Now, this approach is becoming increasingly common as virtualization technologies are widely adopted. In fact, technologies are beginning to emerge that actually enable partitioning at levels below a single processor core. Now, in the example on the bottom half of this slide, we show a customer that has four processor cores and wants to run an application on three of them and then run DB2 in the one remaining processor core. Now, of course, under traditional full-capacity licensing, the customer would have been required to have four licenses of DB2. However, with sub-capacity, they only require one DB2 license. However, if this were licensed at the chip level instead, the customer would effectively be required to have two licenses, since the one core physically resides on a dual-core chip. So with chip licensing, this really requires the customer to effectively double their cost. Now, there are those who say, move to that and just keep the same prices. But I don't think that's realistic. And if you take a look at what Microsoft did when they adjusted to chip-based pricing, they introduced that and 3 months later increased their prices. Of course, claimed it wasn't related, but certainly seems as if it was designed to make up the revenue loss that they were going to experience by redefining the processor as a chip. And of course, this situation just becomes more challenging as the number of cores per chip continues to increase up to that size we talked about Intel having by the end of the decade. And it's because customers are looking for this increasing licensing granularity that most vendors, IBM included, continue to license below the chip level to the processor core. Now let's go ahead and move to slide 14 then and take up that discussion we started a couple of slides ago. So we talked about we have these licensing structures in the marketplace that have created confusion and added complexity. And they've been around for about a year and a quarter or a year and a third. And I mentioned that the license entitlement shown on the left-hand side of this chart only capture the quantity. I will tell you, I've dropped BEA in this case because I'm going to use each of the vendors' data server products as an example, and BEA doesn't fit there. But I want to use this table to show you how to get to evaluating the real price of the software, which is comparing at the per-processor core level that customers have to pay for each of their middleware alternatives. So in this particular table, as I said, we're using the Enterprise Edition of each data server product, so that would be DB2 Enterprise Edition for IBM. In those situations where IBM may require more effective license entitlements, we are very competitive on price. And then when you add to that the really industry-leading function that we've announced recently with the Viper Edition of DB2, it's very easy to be able to focus on the function and the value that's provided and easily explain the very small differences that may exist in some of these cases. Now, I developed this chart using suggested retail price as an illustration. And if you do the same analysis with your customers at the entitled discount level, I'm sure you'll find they have similar results. Let's go ahead now and turn to slide 15, titled Marketplace Needs a New Licensing Structure. Now, as we've been thinking about these issues in the marketplace, and the needs that were identified, we developed a set of objectives that any replacement for the per-processor licensing metric must meet. First, we wanted to demonstrate IBM's licensing leadership with a structure that adapts to any expected changes in the underlying technology, be that hardware or software. And, of course, we also wanted to continue to balance the simplicity of a licensing structure with the kind of granularity that customers are looking for in licensing. And, of course, we didn't want to change the price customers were going to pay for their middleware on today's processors. We think that's a mistake that Oracle made back when they tried introducing universal power units back in 2000 and then had to pull it from the market in 2001. And we recognize from that it's very important to make sure we don't impact our customers' current budgets with this transition. Now, we also recognize that a key benefit of our prior licensing structure was the customer's ability to transfer their licenses within their enterprise, allowing them to adapt their software architecture to better reflect changing business priorities. And another objective we had was to minimize the change to our own internal processes and structures, thereby minimizing change to your internal processes and structures. And, of course, this includes using Passport Advantage. And we mentioned fractional licensing and how onerous that is, so we wanted to eliminate that, but at the same time making the structure granular enough to address the issues we've just been talking about regarding multi-core chips. Now, of course, we wanted to recognize that any replacement structure had to effectively deal with the growing differences in processor core performance that are brought about by those two different chip strategies that are in the marketplace. Because we really did recognize that faster processor cores can generally accomplish more work than slower processor cores. And we also wanted to continue to deliver software price performance in, improvements to customers because they've become accustomed to it. So let's go ahead and turn to slide 16 now and take a look at the new processor value unit licensing structure. Now, IBM has addressed the issues we've been talking about by introducing a replacement for the per-processor licensing approach, which we call processor value unit licensing. Now, a processor value unit is simply a unit of measure used to differentiate the licensing of middleware on processors, and over time, we will evolve it to differentiate processor families based on relative performance. Initially, however, our focus is on converting to the new processor value units without disrupting our customers' current plans and budgets. So going forward, all the IBM middleware, which previously used the per-processor licensing metric, will now be licensed in processor value units. And we've migrated the three broad tiers that already existed under per-processor into the new structure and assigned all the existing processors in the industry to one of those three tiers. So for each product, customers will need to acquire the appropriate number of processor value units for the level or tier of the specific processor on which their hardware is deployed. Now, all the processors within a processor family will be assigned to the same tier. A processor family is simply a group of processors within a given processor technology, which may vary in clock speed or cache size, but which have the same or very similar processor design and performance characteristics. We are not going to split families or cause customers to have to buy additional processor value unit licenses when they've installed minor technology upgrades to their existing hardware. In fact, we think this is another mistake that Oracle made with universal power units half a dozen years ago, where customers, even if they were making an upgrade from, for instance, a 1.2 to a 1.3 gigahertz processor, would be required to pay some additional money to Oracle. So with our structure, a customer can come in today with the slowest Power 5 processor in, for instance, the System P family line, and could upgrade all the way to the fastest Power 5 Plus processor in the System P line, without having to require any additional processor value units or pay any more money. Let's go ahead now and turn to slide 17. And to convert the existing per-processor licenses to the new processor value unit licenses, we've used a conversion factor of 100. Now, as an example, each core on a RISC dual-core-based system required one per-processor license entitlement in the old structure, and going forward, all you'd have to do is multiply that one per-processor license by 100 to get the new processor value unit requirement of 100 processor value units. Or for a different example, if a customer needed to acquire one per-processor license on an x86 dual-core server that had a total of two processor cores in the old structure, they would now need to acquire 50 processor value units for each processor core to get the total processor value unit license requirement of 100. And as you can see, this is also the same answer you'd get if you took the one per-processor license and multiplied it by the conversion factor of 100. Using this conversion factor of 100, we've eliminated fractional licenses and simplified the task of determining the number of licenses required on a server. For example, the Sun T1 octa-core RISC chip now requires 240 processor value units as opposed to 2.4 entitlements for the 8 processor cores on the chip. I should just mention here, if you recall from a few pages ago, we said that that particular processor required 38 one-hundredths of an effective license under the old structure. And you can see here we've dropped that from 38 one-hundredths using the conversion factor down to 30 processor value units. And that shows you some of the extra benefits of using this structure. It turns out that to have a whole number of licenses per server, we had to require 3 licenses on the 8 processor cores. And that was actually a little more than we would have liked given the performance of this system, or as best we can tell what the performance of this system is. Under this new structure, we were actually able to drop that down slightly to 30 processor value units to have it fit more appropriately into the structure. Let's go ahead now and move to slide 13, where we'll show you that migration of existing per-processor licenses is also very simple. Now, we're using the same conversion factor of 100 processor value units for each per-processor entitlement, as we discussed earlier, for all our processor entitlements. So with this conversion approach, customers' prior processor entitlement investments are completely protected, as there are no additional processor value unit entitlements required, assuming, of course, that the customer had the appropriate number of entitlements under the old structure. And I want to emphasize this. Using this conversion factor of 100, there is no way that a customer can be hurt in this conversion. In fact, there are two cases where they can come off a little better off, but there is no way that they can be hurt as long as they were in compliance prior to this new licensing structure being introduced. So, for example, again, using that x86 dual-core-based system in the old per-processor licensing, they would have had one per-processor license for a system with one chip and two cores. So effectively half of a license per core. Now, migrating this to processor value units, the conversion results in 100 processor value units at the chip level, or one per processor entitlement times the 100 processor value unit conversion factor. And, of course, that's the same thing that you'd get if you looked up the processor on the table to see that it needs 50 processor value units, and you'd need two, so that would be a total of 100 processor value units. Now, earlier I mentioned that we're introducing this new structure without impacting the price customers currently pay today. And let me show you how we accomplish this on the next slide, which is slide 19. Now, just like the conversion of the per processor licenses to processor value unit licenses, we've also used the conversion factor of 100. In this case, though, instead of multiplying today's price by 100, we've divided it by 100 to get the new price per processor value unit. And let me be clear about why the customer price doesn't change as we move to the new licensing structure. We mentioned before that the price a customer is going to pay is the product of the number of licenses times the price per license. So by multiplying the number of licenses by 100 and at the same time dividing the price per license by 100, the net effect mathematically is no change. Now, as you can see clearly in the table in the bottom half of the chart, this is brought forth. Here we're using WebSphere network deployment on a RISC dual-core server system as the example. Originally, the customer acquired two licenses at $15,000 U.S. per license for a total of $30,000. In fact, all my currencies in this example will be the U.S. dollar. And by dividing the price by 100 and multiplying the licenses by 100, the customer will now have 200 processor value units at $150 each for the same total of $30,000. Now, in order to accomplish this, we maintain the existing three tiers that we had under the prior structure. So I'd just like to emphasize one more time as we leave this chart, customers will not see a change in their prices as a result of the introduction of this new processor value unit licensing structure. Let's go ahead then and move to slide 20. And I'm going to talk about flexibility here from a couple of perspectives. First, through the use of the processor value unit structure and subcapacity licensing, we continue to make it possible for customers to consolidate their servers or consolidate workloads in order to optimize their middleware system designs. Additionally, the processor value unit licensing structure provides the flexibility that customers need to not only continue to see software price performance improvements, but also to get the kind of granularity that they're looking for. So as processor cores improve from generation to generation, we plan to continue to deliver software price performance improvements on these succeeding technologies. Let's go ahead now and move to slide 21. And we'll talk about how we're going to place new processor families in the processor value unit structure. And as we do that, as I've said, a key objective of ours is to continue to deliver middleware price performance improvements. And going forward, we're also going to consider relative performance as an important factor for assigning processor value units to a new processor family. Now, to determine this relative performance, we're going to assess a number of different industry standard benchmarks. Now, these benchmarks include both transaction processing, such as TPCC, and processor-based benchmarks like SPECINT or SPECJBB. Now, other factors that we'll consider to determine the number of processor value units are the market conditions and the desire to keep the structure as simple as possible while we try to balance that with precision. Let's go ahead now and move to slide 22. Now, to help determine the number of processor value units that a customer might require on any server type, in addition to just using the conversion factor of 100, we've also provided a processor value unit calculator. Now, of course, you're certainly not required to use the calculator if you already know how many licenses your customer will need, although we do recommend it in order to obtain the latest processor family announcements. Now, in addition, since a number of you folks may not use the software group-supported tools or may have developed your own, we're also making a value unit table available for download. Now, this table is, in effect, a spreadsheet that will guide you to the correct number of processor value units for any processor core type. And for more information on these new tools, I encourage you to join us next week for the deep dive session when we'll take you through a more detailed look at these new quote tools. And let's go ahead and just take a quick look on slide 23 at what the front page of this calculator looks like. So we're providing the processor value unit calculator to help you determine the number of processor value units a customer requires on any server type. So what it's going to do is step you through a series of questions in either expert or guided mode that will include things like server vendor, server brand, and processor type. And after you input the number of processor cores on which the program is going to run, the calculator will assist you in determining the appropriate number of processor value units for your hardware environment. And let's just move to the next page now and take a look at the benefits of the processor value unit licensing, both to our customers and also to you folks, our sellers. Now, as you can see, with the new processor value unit licensing, IBM's made the structure clearer and simpler to administer, both for our customers and for you, as well as, frankly, for IBM. And specifically, we've done this by reducing the complexity of fractional licenses and providing the flexibility and granularity still required for licensing IBM middleware, leveraging subcapacity licensing, and also continuing to deliver software price performance improvements. And, of course, I'll emphasize one last time here today that we're not going to change middleware prices with the introduction of this structure. Now, the benefits of this structure aren't limited just to new multi-core technologies, but, in fact, also begins to position us to address the increase in adoption of new hardware and software technologies such as virtualization. The bottom line is, though, that the new structure really provides a sustainable licensing foundation for us for the future. And, of course, for you, our sellers, there's also that added benefit that Melinda mentioned earlier, that for the first time, as customers migrate their workloads to more powerful processors, you're going to have the opportunity, or at least the potential opportunity, to sell additional processor value unit licensing. And leveraging this licensing structure also provides you with the flexibility and granularity needed to sell value and discount less. Now, before I wrap up, I just want to walk through three more slides, rather, to focus your attention on the processor value unit part numbers and the implementation of this pricing structure. So let's turn now to slide 26. To implement the processor value unit structure, IBM's actually replacing over 13,000 per processor part numbers going forward with new part numbers on a one-for-one basis. The existing part number structure doesn't change at all, though. That is, we're just going to have new part numbers for license and first 12 months of maintenance, a new part number for maintenance renewals, a new part number for maintenance reinstatement, and a new part number for trade-ups. And to establish the new processor value unit prices, I told you that we're dividing the existing price by the conversion factor of 100. Now, in some countries, due to rounding, this may have resulted in some very small price changes, and listed it here as plus or minus 1%, although I haven't personally seen any over 0.5%. And again, this is done because we do our prices initially in U.S. dollars, and as we convert it to other currencies, whether it's the euro or the peso, to make sure that, or to get to the smallest unit, it may involve some small amounts of rounding. Now, we've also converted Passport Advantage points in the same fashion, but we don't expect any of this rounding to impact a customer's Passport Advantage band level. Now, also, there are some products out there that have had relatively small prices. So for billing and administrator simplicity, we've created packs of 10 processor value units as the minimum order quantity for these programs. Now, these programs would be ones where the per processor license plus the first 12 months of maintenance was less than $1,250, U.S. dollars, that is, and where the maintenance renewal price was less than $250. And, for example, when you convert the per-processor price of, let's say, $100 using the conversion factor of 100, you get a processor value unit price of $1. And when you then discount it, it becomes a very small price indeed. So those are the products that we've created these packs of 10 processor value units for. And I mentioned we're going to convert to new part numbers earlier on this slide, so let's look at it in a little bit more detail on slide 27. So I said we're going to replace all of our existing per-processor part numbers with processor value unit part numbers going forward, but keep the structure the same. And as I've mentioned, all new license entitlements will now be in processor value units, and the new part numbers will be in processor value units. All the new license entitlements will be in processor value units, but I also want you to know that existing license entitlements will remain unchanged using per processor licenses. So for customers planning to use existing environments, all they simply need to do is use that conversion factor of 100 to determine the equivalent number of processor value units. In addition, all per processor software maintenance entitlements were converted on Tuesday to processor value unit maintenance entitlements. So when you or your customer looks on the system, they will all show up with the new part numbers and be shown in processor value units. And a complete list of the part numbers was provided in the announcement in one of the three announcement letters. And on the page that we're going to go to in just a moment, we'll also show you that there's an Excel spreadsheet that holds all those part numbers. But on the bottom half of the slide, you can really see the effect of the part number change. Again, it uses WebSphere application server network deployment on a single core chip as the example. On the left, you can see the old per processor part numbers, the number of required licenses, and the price per license. And on the right, you can see the replacement part number under the processor value unit structure, the number of these licenses, which are required for a single core type processor, and the price per processor value unit. And as you can see, just as a reminder, that the price per core didn't change. So let's go ahead then and move to the last slide in my presentation, which talks to next steps you may want to consider. I know there's been a lot of information I've given you before this in the presentation, but there's more information about this new structure on Passport Advantage. And you can see a listing of some of the key things here on this particular slide. In the sales kit, which you can see the link for when you download the presentation. In fact, that's a hot link that you can go directly there. We have a scripted customer presentation, not dissimilar to what you've gone through today. And there's also an MP3 file of that if you would like to listen to that or, in fact, play it for the customer. We have the three announcement letters. We have a set of frequently asked questions targeted for you, our sellers. There is a processor value unit table to show you all of the levels and all the key technologies that fit into our table. It's sorted in two different ways. We have some information that talks about some of that key terminology, such as what is a core and what is a processor, to allow you to help the customers understand why we continue to license to the processor core, why that's so important for them going forward. We've also provided a set of sales scenarios to help walk you through what might happen. And, in fact, we'll look at some of those sales scenarios on the deep dive call next week. As I mentioned, we have that replacement part number file, which is an Excel file that you could search for an existing part number and find the replacement part number. And also we link to a set of customer deliverables, which our joint customers can get to on IBM's external website. It includes the overview presentation, although the script isn't provided. However, we do provide the audio presentation of that set of charts there. There is a customer brochure that they can download, or in fact that you could download to give to them. And then there's a customer version of the frequently asked questions. So hopefully with that all that material, you'll be very comfortable going out and discussing this with your customers and helping ease the transition so we can focus on getting back to new license sales in the third and fourth quarter. And with that, then, I'd like to conclude and go ahead and turn it back to Mike Ryan.
Roger, thank you. And Amy, if you could advance to the next slide. I guess I need to go a couple more. Let's see. There we go. So, Mike Ryan, and business partner, Channel Sales Enablement, and I will take just a couple minutes to position for you the sales enablement training that we have in place so that we can ensure that we properly educate you so that you can understand and apply processor value unit licensing. So I've got a few minutes left, and I'm going to go through these a little quickly just so that we can get some Q&A at the end of this call. There's so many on the call. The first chart that you see in front of you is a recent news article that I came across, and I thought it was very important for this call. And the title, I think, says it all, and the reason why IBM is going to processor value unit licensing, and that is, before the end of the decade, Intel is planning a 32-core processor. Of course, there'll be increments along the way, and IBM's announcement of processor value unit licensing will be able to scale to that. our unit licensing model will provide us the ability to take into account today's licensing, again, as you've heard many times before, at no price impact, and scales for the future. At the bottom of that of the page is a hyperlink, and you can link directly to that article. And I think that came out on July the 10th, so very current. Amy, if you go to slide 32, a very simple timeline. The announcement was the 25th, and on today's call, the Think Thursday Sales Series kickoff, we're actually communicating and positioning processor value unit licensing for you. Now, on the second, you heard both Roger and Melinda speak to the deep dive. Well, this will be the sales skills training, and I'm going to speak a little more to that on the next slide. Now, there's one piece I want you to take into account if it hasn't already been mentioned. The part numbers were available on the 25th for processor value unit licensing. You can see at the bottom of the slide here, I've drawn an arrow all the way through the end of October. And legacy Passport Advantage part numbers, the license part numbers, will be overlapping availability. So if you have bids already out there, rest assured that those bids can go through the system through that date. Okay, that's a key point for our business partners and customers. Want to make sure that has been addressed and that you are aware of that. Okay? Amy, if you go to the next slide. So this deep dive or the processor value unit sales skills training. The enablement skills we're going to provide, we're going to go a little deeper into the processor value unit technology education, an overview, if you like. And then we're going to address some topics that are, I deem, very critical and most important to understand to how to apply this. Sales scenarios and the sales tools, including how to use the value unit calculator. Okay, so this is a very important call that you want to participate on, or alternatively be able to download the audio replay in the presentation and listen at your leisure. We'll talk to that in another minute. The conference call schedule, there are two calls currently set up, the AP Geography, and if you are from the AP Geography, you click on that link, and if you're from the Americas and Europe, you will click on the following link. That call will be next week at the same time, 11 a.m. Eastern, and it will be on Wednesday. For full conference details, again, go to that link. The presentation will also be made available from that link, as well as from, if we go to the next slide, software sales deliverables. All of the sales deliverables are being made available at this Processor Value Unit Resources for Business Partners. There are three hyperlinks on this particular website, on this particular page, excuse me. So when you access the presentation, you can click there and go directly to that particular website. Roger had mentioned all the deliverables, so I'm not going to repeat those that are out there. There is the website for the Processor Value Unit Calculator and Passport Advantage Online for Resellers. These do require a password, and you can get that password and ID, and you can get that from the Passport Advantage Online for Resellers. Okay, next slide. Call to action. So the first call to action we wanted to do was to attend today's kickoff or announcement. If you are live on this call or you're listening to the replay, fantastic. The second piece is that you need to attend or listen to the deep dive, the sales skills training conference call, which is being scheduled for August 2nd. The third piece there, you can see I put a microphone or headset as a reminder that all those sales deliverables are available at that Processor Value Unit Resources for Business Partners website, as well as the MP3s. So MP3s will be made available, and you can listen to those at your leisure. Finally, if you have other questions or you have any additional details, contact your IBM software distributor, tech line, IBM business partner, your sales representative, or anyone on this call will be glad to assist you. And with that, I'm going to go to the next slide and turn it back over to you, Amy.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Roger. And Kelsey, I'm going to turn over you to do the polling questions, please.
Certainly, Amy. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please respond by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And keep in mind that there will be a brief pause between each question to allow everyone a chance to respond. And now for our first question. The content for this web conference was at the appropriate level. Please press star 1 for excellence. Star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, and star 4 for poor. We will pause to assemble the responses. And for our final question today, today's overall web conference rating was star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, and star 4 for poor. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. And that does conclude our survey, so let's move on to taking your questions. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And once again, do keep in mind that if you are using a speakerphone, to please remove your mute function to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 for questions. Our first question will come from George Takla.
Oh, hi there. How are you all today? My question has to do with VMware, and are you looking at licensing any of the virtualization or making changes to virtualization in general with subcapacity license, and are you looking to put VMware there?
Great question. Actually, this is Roger. Actually, we announced an enhancement to our subcapacity licensing in April of this year. Just so happens it was April 25th, 2 months prior to this announcement, where we extended our subcapacity licensing to VMware and Microsoft Virtual Server environments on x86 chips. I will tell you, at the moment, we can only get down to the chip level. We expect that restriction to go away early next year, but we did announce that as of April 25th, and you can find more information about that on Passport Advantage.
Anything else today, George?
Oh, that's it.
Thank you so much. And we'll move on to Kevin Potts.
Hi, thank you. I could not view the presentation with you guys, and I was wondering if there will be a link to get the presentation to be viewed offline.
Hi, this is Mike. And the presentation was stored actually in multiple places, including the IBM Virtual Innovation Center. It's on the Partner World Enable Now calendar. And, of course, it's at that website we had mentioned. Of course, if you don't have the presentation, you probably can't see the Business Partner Resources website. So
right.
If you want, if you could send me an email to meryan@us.ibm.com, I'll be glad to send that to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Our next question will come from Joanne Taylor.
Good morning. My question has to do with dealing with government clients. Being able to price this using your new rules assumes that the person doing the purchasing knows the hardware that the software is running on, which when you're dealing with the government, you're typically dealing with somebody in contracts or purchasing, and they don't have a clue. So how are we going to make this work for government?
Well, Joanne, the rules for government are the same in terms of needing to understand the platform it runs on. And I want to point out that that isn't something that's new with this structure. In fact, that existed in the old per processor, and in fact, it's existed since April of 2005 when the x86 dual-core chips. And then once again, it isn't just an IBM factor. It's actually true for Oracle and BEA and most other middleware vendors as well. So I think, unfortunately, given the way the hardware technology is evolving, the software licensing is becoming more complex, and I'm afraid I don't have a good answer to getting around that. All we can ask is that we help to educate all of our customers, and I realize that gets harder when you're dealing with an Internet client, but to educate all our customers to understand that we still license to the processor core and that they need to have enough processor value units licenses for that. We're still going to use the trust model. We are not forcing a compliance tool. So we're just going to assume our customer is going to make a best faith effort to try and be in compliance wherever possible.
Okay.
Thanks, Joanne.
And Sue Swanson, if you're there, did you have any additional questions or any additional comments to that question?
No, not really.
Roger did a fine job.
Great.
As a reminder to our audience, it is star one for questions. We'll now hear from Dagmar Ziegler.
Hi. Just for the confirmation, so that we can order still the normal process of licensing until beginning of November.
That's correct. We encourage
okay.
you to close all those existing bids out by October 30th. That gives us 10 days to process it through the system in case there are any difficulties.
Okay. And then after the, I think it was the 10th of November, we order the new process
yeah,
value units.
We would actually encourage you to order the new for any new bids that you put out from here on out.
All right.
It's what we'd like to see is just, you know, to close out any existing bids because we don't want to cause you any extra work. We don't want to make you redo a bid. So, close those out using the old part numbers, but for anything new, we'd prefer to see you using the new part numbers.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
As a final reminder to our audience, that is star one for questions. We'll pause to give everyone a final opportunity.
Kelsey?
Yes, Amy.
I do have a writing question that I'd like to propose, I think, to Sue. The question was, has the IBM price book been changed to accommodate this new pricing system?
Yes, let me make it be pretty clear here. First of all, the part numbers are there. I've checked them myself. And so both part numbers, both per processor and per value unit part numbers are there. There is also a link to the value unit calculator from the price book. If you'll see some hot links when you look in there, and you'll see value unit calculator, and that's what will take you to the calculator.
Thank you.
We do have some additional questions. We'll go to John Keegan.
Hi. Morning, everyone. Quick question on the SVI program. Now that the leads are entered and we have 9 months to close them, is it automatically going to be switched over, or is it going to be a manual process down the road of going back in and changing to the value units?
Do you know specifically as regards to the program?
Yeah, let me think about that. It's a process question. You're talking about SVI, right? Do you enter actual part numbers into the SVI when you do the opportunity identification?
Well, when you look up the part number in the eligible spreadsheet, then that tells you the brand family, and then you put the quantity and price per unit into the lead.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to get back to you on that because after November 10th, we will no longer accept. Where we will not be easily accepting orders in per processor part numbers. So although you have 9 months to close the deal, I would assume that after, let's say it takes the full 9 months, there's no question about whether you're going to get SVI or not. If you were entitled before, you'll be entitled after. It's just a question of the order being placed with the appropriate part numbers.
Right.
So did somebody take down your name?
Okay.
And I'll get back to you.
All right. Thank you.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the name, the person who posed the question?
John Keegan.
John Keegan, okay.
At Ultramatic, thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to Sam Kendall.
Hi. As benchmark scores for future processors rise, how much in proportion do you expect that processor value units will rise rating those future processors?
This is Roger. We are going to do our best to put a processor family into the structure at a point that will cover the entire lifespan of that family, which is tended to be 2 to 3 years, because we would like to never have to change the particular processor value unit level in the structure. Now, of course, we could, based on the early announcements of a chip family, make some mistakes and in a case or two have to change that. But our goal is, as much as possible, where vendors will work with us through non-disclosure prior to announcement to understand not only the initial processors being introduced, but how they intend to improve those processors over the life of that processor family, so that we might actually put it into the structure slightly higher than where it might have gone just based on the initial, because as you know, so often vendors introduce a slower processor first and then speed it up over time. We're going to do the best we can, knowing what's expected to happen over the life of the processor, to put that in once and only once. But, again, we can't guarantee that. Does that answer the question, Sam?
Okay,
I didn't finish.
I guess so, but it's you know, if a new processor family comes out that you expect to be twice as fast as the fastest processor now, would you give each, assuming it was single core, let's say, would you give it 200 units or something less?
Our goal, as we said, is to provide continued improved price, software price performance improvements. So I wouldn't expect it to go in at two times. It would be going in at something less than that, so the customer does see some price performance improvements.
Okay.
It's hard to give you a more detailed answer without the specifics of individual chips.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our next question will come from Mike Smith.
Hello, everyone. Pardon me if I haven't quite grasped this. I'm trying to come at it from another angle, which is if you're installing multiple products onto a server with two processors, how does it equate between the products and the actual processor points, and how do they get assigned to each individual processor? Or am I barking up the wrong tree here?
No, I think that's a reasonable question, Mike. We've assigned each processor into the structure at a particular level, so a certain number of processor value units required for all IBM middleware products on that particular technology. So if you take, for instance, an x86 dual-core server, it's in the structure at 50 processor value units. So every IBM middleware product that uses the, used to use the per processor metric has been migrated and will require 50 processor value units. Now, just like in the old structure, the product price per value unit changes, but the number of value units is constant across all of our products.
Right.
Does that make it help clear it up at all for you, Mike?
Yes, thank you.
Right. I also want to add one other caveat here. There are actually a handful of products which didn't transition over. It's primarily typically Systems Manager, and all the products we acquired through the Essential acquisition, they just went into Passport Advantage just a week ago, and we didn't think it was fair to customers to, put them in 1 week and then jerk it around again 1 week later. So they'll move over to the structure at some future date. Do we have any other questions?
We have no further questions at this time. Amy, I'll turn it back to you for closing or additional remarks.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I do want to thank Melinda, Roger, and Mike for presenting today, and Sue for her availability for a Q&A. I appreciate that. And I want to thank you, our IBM business partners, for taking time out of your day to attend today's Sales Enablement Web Conference. As a reminder, the next IBM Software Think Thursday program will be on August 24th. The topic has yet to be determined, so please check back with the VIC or the Partner World calendar. Now, for your convenience, the past IBM Software Think Thursday sales series has been listed, and if topics are of interest, I encourage you to visit the Virtual Innovation Center to listen to the audio replays and download the presentations. Instructions on how to access these past sales series are provided on slides 3 and 4 of this presentation. So until our next web conference, good luck and good selling.
Thank you, Amy. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. On behalf of IBM, I would like to thank you for your participation. Enjoy the rest of your day.